This meeting of the Senate Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee will come to order. We have one bill on the agenda, Senate File 15. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Mr. Chair, is that on? Okay, I think so. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to present this bill and to discuss something that is so important as health care coverage for Minnesota's children and families. And there has been a lot of discussion prior to the start of the legislature this year about covering all children. But as the bills have started to come out, we're recognizing that not all children are being covered, but only a portion of those are being covered. But I'm here to tell you that this bill actually does cover all children, and I'm very excited about that. As a practicing psychologist at a hospital in Duluth, I am very familiar with our current healthcare system. I see on a daily basis how our current complicated and fractured system of health care denies access to both the uninsured and the insured. Skyrocketing health care costs have made it increasingly difficult for employers to offer coverage. There are costs and access barriers to public programs. The number of uninsured children in Minnesota increased to 68,000 between 2001 and 2004. The number of uninsured children ages 0 to 5, which are critical ages for children's development, increased by 11,000 during that same period. Minnesota is one of only six states that has seen an increase in its children's uninsured rate. All children deserve access to quality, affordable health care, no matter where their parents work or how much their parents earn. Providing access to health care coverage and eliminating cost barriers to care are first steps to ensuring Minnesota children's health, helping them to thrive and to do well in life. Study after study shows that insured children are more likely to receive necessary care, less likely to miss school, and they perform better in school. Investing in our children's health is an important investment for Minnesota. And that is why I am so proud to be the Senate author of the Children's Health Security Act, Senate File 15. The Children's Health Security Act will provide universal coverage for all children in Minnesota by 2010 in a two-phase approach. The proposal will create one large health care purchasing pool that will contain all the children from Minnesota families who wish to participate. Because the pool will contain all children, it will be able to negotiate and leverage significant savings from private health care providers. This will mean a comprehensive set of services can be offered at an affordable cost. If your family and my family were to approach the private health care marketplace to negotiate for services, we would not have much leverage. But imagine if we could pull all of Minnesota's 1 million children into one single purchasing pool for health care. We would definitely be noticed. The health care benefits that will be available for children in this pool will be modeled after our state's medical assistance program, which is a very comprehensive package. Under the Act, parents would pay no premiums, and their children would not be subject to co-payments or deductibles. Too often, high co-payments and deductibles curtail the ability of the insured to access health care and seek the treatment that they need. I am also excited about this proposal because I am a strong advocate of primary prevention when it comes to health care. Leaving illness unchecked leads to far more costly health ailments. Our strong health care system, our current health care system, is so inefficient and fractured that we often end up dealing with patients seeking care for illnesses only after they have progressed and once their treatment has become devastatingly expensive. This is especially true for children. We have too many children without the right immunizations and prevention treatments. The Minnesota Children's Health Security Act will improve children's access to primary prevention and health screening, which will promote healthier children. Therefore, we will achieve cost savings in the long run. Another key aspect of this bill is that we will move away from employer-based coverage. Under this bill, parents will no longer have to worry about how changing jobs or being laid off will affect their children's health care. They will no longer have to change health plans. They can keep the same doctor and the same coverage for their children, regardless of their employment status. We believe that we can provide universal health coverage for all children by making the current system less complicated while still ensuring choice and high-quality health care options. Without fundamental reform, our health care system will be priced out of reach for most Minnesotans. Already, families are watching the costs of health care take up more and more of their take-home pay. Over the past 4 years, insurance premiums have grown 3 times faster than the state's economy and workers' wages. We cannot afford our existing system of health care. Universal health care coverage for children is not just affordable. It is doable, and now is the time that we must act. And, Mr. Chair, at this time, I would like to take up the delete all amendment to Senate file number 15.
The A1 we have in front of, I think it's in your packets you should all have the A1 amendment.
And
Senator Solton, as part of your author's amendments, you wanted to make some oral amendments to it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this would be an author's amendment, and added to this would be an oral amendment on page 4 to line 4.2, after plan, insert the words based on the criteria stated in this subdivision, so that sentence reads, the commissioner shall present a health care delivery plan based on the criteria stated in this subdivision to the legislature by January 15th, 2008. And I have one other small amendment. In section 6.3, after access, add to and after utilization of, and delete to, so that it reads, examine how to increase access to and utilization of preventive care and health care services.
Okay. So the second amendment on page 6, line 30, examine how to increase access to and utilization of preventive care.
Correct.
Everybody have that?
Mm-hmm. No. Could you read it again?
Examine how to increase access to and utilization of preventive care. We have that one. The first one on page 4, line 2, health care delivery plan based on the criteria stated in this subdivision to the legislature. Does everybody have those amendments? So Senator Solon moves the A1 amendment with those changes incorporated into it in the form of an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape you want it.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
I have an amendment to your A1 amendment. Would you like me to offer it now or later?
I'd be glad to take a look at it.
Do you want to present, is it a technical change or something you want a major issue?
Oh, I guess it's being typed, so okay. I'll wait.
Why don't we just go present the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to walk through the amendment. So I'll take it section by section. The first section establishes a children's health security account. Section 2 establishes the citation as the Children's Health Security Act. Section 3 are the definitions. It defines a child as children through the age of 18, and unmarried children who are full-time students under the age of 25 and who are still dependent, and this mirrors the private health care market's definition. The commissioner is the Commissioner of Human Services. Section 4 establishes the Children's Health Security Program and states the implementation of the program shall begin on July 1st of 2008. Section 5, Subdivision 1, establishes the general requirements, stating that under Subdivision 2, it'll be a phased-in approach. Children with income that is equal to or less than 300% of the federal poverty guidelines are eligible to begin enrollment on July 1st, 2008 for phase one, or upon federal approval if it is not by July 1st, 2008, whichever is lighter. And 300% of the federal poverty guideline is $60,000 for a family of four. The second phase would open the pool to all children in 2010. Subdivision 3 establishes residency requirements. This section requires that a child be a permanent resident of the state in order to be eligible. The residency requirements match the requirements of other public programs. And a child who moved to Minnesota primarily to obtain medical treatment or health coverage for a pre-existing condition is not a permanent resident. Subdivision 4 states that enrollment in the pool is voluntary. It also states that if the private sector or Medicare coverage is available, coverage under the Children's Health Security Act is secondary. Section 6 states that the covered services are the same as those in Chapter 256B, the medical assistance benefits set. Section 7 establishes that there are no premiums or cost-sharing requirements. Section 8 states that applications must be made available at provider offices, local human service agencies, school districts, and other places where children are. It's intended to make the application available to children where children are, in addition to county and state agencies. Subdivision 2 establishes eligibility to be determined within 30 days of the date of the application. And the effective date of coverage is the day that eligibility is approved, except when, in the case of persons applying under presumptive eligibility. And Subdivision 3 states that presumptive eligibility begins on the date that it is determined, based on preliminary information, that the child meets these eligibility requirements. Subdivision 4 states that renewal will occur every 12 months. Under the current program, renewal is every 6 months. And we lose a lot of families at renewable time. But because the process is cumbersome, the applications are 24 pages long with 11 pages of instructions. And so this application needs to be filled out at each renewal period. And I know that Senator Berglund is hoping to change this to a 1 or 2 page process. Section 9 relates to service delivery. It states that the commissioner may contract with HMOs, county-based purchasing plans, to provide services under a managed care system, and that the commissioner may contract on a fee-for-service basis, and that contracting may be done on a county-by-county basis. This section establishes criteria to be used in contracting, including cost, quality, breadth of services, including medical, mental health, and dental services, efficiency and cost-effectiveness, and integration of best practices. And finally, the commissioner is to create a contracting plan to be presented to the legislature by January 15th of 2008. Subdivision 2 establishes requirements for health plans under the contract. Yeah. Subdivision 3 sets up a fee-for-service grievance process to be appealed to the commissioner. It uses procedures set forth in the consumer assistance section. Subdivision 4 states that the commissioner shall contract on a fee-for-service basis to provide services on MA home and community-based waivers. Section 10 sets up the payment rates. The commissioner shall set the method and amount of payment for services in consultation with an actuary. Section 11 is about consumer assistance. It sets forth requirements for assisting enrollees in choosing a health plan company. It requires the commissioner to establish a website, make health plan information available, and interpreter services as necessary, and it makes benefit educators available. Subdivision 2 requires the commissioner to designate an ombudsperson to advocate for children who are enrolled in the program. Section 12 relates to monitoring of evaluation and quality. Participating health plans are required to submit quality of care, cost, utilization, and enrollee satisfaction data. The commissioner shall evaluate the data to summarize quality across plans and require health plans to implement quality improvement plans. Under Section 13, the commissioner shall develop an implementation plan for the Children's Health Security Act and present the plan to the legislature by January 15th of 2008. Section 14 requires the commissioner to seek federal approval necessary to implement this program. Section 15 establishes a legislative task force to study health care reform and cost containment. This task force is established to study health care reform options prior to implementation of Phase 2, which will open the pool to all children. The study must provide recommendations on a health care delivery system that provides cost containment, ensures access to medical and preventive services, increases utilization of preventive services, incorporates best practices to improve health outcomes, and reduces health disparities among minority populations. Section 16 states the commissioner shall adopt rules to implement the act, and Section 17 makes an appropriation from the general fund to develop and implement the act. And that walks us through the bill, Mr. Chair. And at this time, I'd like to call on Mr. Jim Koppel to come up and make remarks.
Mr. Koppel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Koppel. I'm the director of the Children's Defense Fund, which is a nonprofit child advocacy organization here in Minnesota, dedicated to improving policies for children and the lives of children across Minnesota. I'll make my remarks fairly brief and in support of this legislation. The reason we need this legislation, the reason we need to look at a significant change of the traditional ways we've provided health care or tried to provide health care to children, is we have a very fragmented, inconsistent, unaffordable, and deteriorating health care coverage mechanism, whether we're looking at it in the public programs or we're looking at it in private coverage. The erosion of private coverage every year continues. What happens is employers can't afford coverage. They pass on more of the cost of the premium to the employee, or they drop the coverage altogether. It's their only option in order to be competitive in a marketplace that's increasingly international. And when you hear Ford Motor Company say that they have more health care in a car than steel, you get an idea of the impact that health care costs have on our ability as businesses to compete internationally. And they compete against auto industry worldwide that has no health care in their car because they have universal coverage financed through their government, and it is not breaking the backs of their employers. So employers struggle with this. The next thing they do is to cut, maybe buy a more affordable benefit set. A common term today is consumer-driven. I call it consumer-financed, because what happens is more and more costs are passed on to the insured person, and the employee ends up paying more and more of the cost. In a study we did in 2004, when we looked at the total cost in Minnesota of who pays for the health care of children across the state, We hear a lot of talk about public programs and can they afford it and continue to cover. Public programs cover of about the $3 billion that we spent in 2004 on children's health. Public programs covered about or cost about $950 million. That's federal and state spending. Employers was about $900 million. The largest payer of children's health care in Minnesota are parents at well over $1 billion. They pay the premium share as well as all co-pays and deductibles. So when we say this is not affordable for business and not affordable for government, this is not affordable for parents. And that's the rapidly increasing part of health care coverage, is what parents pay. In addition to the fact that we see increases in health care going up faster than cost of living, more than raises, more than the economy, that all is getting passed through and increasing the burden for parents raising children. This bill addresses that issue because it allows families with children in phase one up to 300% of poverty to move their children, if they choose, into this pool and not have a child's health coverage depend upon where their parents happen to work. And in greater Minnesota, this is a bigger problem than it is in the metro area. In fact, in northeast Minnesota, a child is twice as likely to be uninsured as in the metro area. And in every region of this state other than the metro area, your chances are greater of not having health care coverage than in the Twin Cities. The majority of the kids reside in the Twin Cities in numbers, but the percentage of kids is actually greater in greater Minnesota. Employers are smaller, they have less leverage, health care plans are more expensive, they often cover less services, and again, these children are left to vulnerability not only of the 70,000 that are uninsured, but of the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, that are underinsured in families where the premiums compromise budgets, where copays and deductibles keep families from accessing the services they need. And studies have shown that families with high deductibles act like uninsured families. They come in too late, wait too long, have worse outcomes, and end up in emergency rooms. So we need a system that's predictable, long-term, affordable, and gives our children the same outcomes in health care that we have set up in education. We promise every child access to education. We promise every child public education. And that why we cannot think of health care when it's so intertwined with education is the same promise, the same payoff in the long run, that if we keep our children healthy, their school outcomes are better, their life outcomes are better, and it's the very definition of prevention of unhealthy adults is this investment in children. So I urge you to pass this bill and to move this state in the same direction as nearly a dozen states across this country as they debate very similar legislation and very similar initiatives as they struggle with this issue of the uninsured and underinsured and unstable economics of health care. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Koppel. Questions from the committee? Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chairman, I mean, and isn't that wonderful that we're making that mistake finally? Mr. Chairman and Mr. Koppel, the purchasing pool that would be created through this bill, do you envision that it would be purchasing health care for children separate from the purchasing pool that we have for purchasing health care for all of our public programs through the Department of Human Services?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Berglund, the ideal way to do this would be to have a coordinated pool that would be run through the Department of Human Services and thereby coordinating all the funding available and resources and not robbing one fund to pay another or to have different programs serving different children. The purpose of this is to the child or to the family is to have one simple form that gives you health care coverage behind the scenes as we do now, drawing down federal money and the waivers that we have. We coordinate that but on the front end, it's one front end mechanism for all families to put their children in.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Koppel, I'm not talking about the front end here. I'm talking about purchasing health care, which the Department of Human Services does quite a bit of today. And I'm trying to establish the fact of whether you envision a separate purchasing pool for children from the purchasing pool we already have for children and adults that we purchase for today.
I think, Mr. Chairman and Senator Berglund, the language is a little vague in here right now, but the intent would be that the Department of Human Services would purchase those.
All as one
care.
Pool. All as one pool?
All the children or everyone that we buy care for now as one pool? I think the pool serves many different purposes. Like we have them all, it's all in one pool, but we purchase for at-home care, 24-hour care attendance, et cetera. There's all different purchasing arrangements. Are you talking about just keeping within the department to purchase for whatever is necessary for the various populations that they're purchasing health care for?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Koppel, I'm talking about the fact that we purchase for families today. We purchase for individuals in Minnesota Care. We purchase for children that may not have parents who are eligible for MA today. We purchase for general assistance medical care individuals. We purchase that as a pool. They're separate programs, but we purchase as a pool. So if we're negotiating drug prices, we negotiate for the whole pool. We don't negotiate for one part of it and then another part of it. And I'm trying to figure out if you want a separate pool to negotiate for children or if you want children to be added to the pool we already negotiate for, or at least children that are not in it now to be in the pool that we negotiate for now.
Mr. Cobb.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, I believe the latter, your point, this would be all part of the pool that we purchase for now.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Solon, I think as you move along, I think it would be good to clarify that in this bill.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator and Mr. Koppel. My question is related to Senator Berglund's. First, I will say there are so many people that are thrilled with this bill, the idea that all children are finally going to have a way to be covered in Minnesota, and the fact that it's universal and comprehensive, I think is very important to people. That dental is included and mental health services, I mean, it's key. So thank you so much, Senator, for carrying the bill and bringing it to us today. Questions that I have gotten from folks that I'd like clarified related to Senator Berglund's is, are we talking about public purchasing pools or private purchasing pools? And some of the concerns I've heard is that covering all kids is fabulous, but are we going to be pushing them into HMOs, which skim off a little too much, people believe, in administrative costs, and there's reduced costs actually going to children? So again, how the mechanism of purchasing, please?
Yes, and I, Mr. Chairman and Senator Erickson-Ropes, I think in the bill we spell out that the commissioner shall come back January 1st of 2008 with a plan of coverage and a delivery system that could be by county, but has to spell out, I think according to the oral amendment that was added this morning, according to the details outlined there, which would be cost-effective, high-quality delivery system, which may include health plans, may include fee-for-service, may include other forms of coverage. And then that plan would be presented to the legislature, I believe sometime in January of 2008 for a reaction. So I think the delivery system is not defined set in this bill is forcing children anywhere. But we do want a high-quality delivery system that will deliver preventive care, will use best practices, and get us to the best outcomes, because the goal of all this isn't coverage, it's healthy children. So without that piece, we would just be pound foolish. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair. And also to Senator Erickson Ropes, is that one of the premises is that we can deliver it much less expensive than our current delivery system. So that is one of the significant factors, is for the commissioner to look at cost containment and placing it under a single administration.
Thank you.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Copples, in your testimony, you talked about that the largest segment of cost is currently being borne by parents, and you spoke of that as kind of that's a bad thing. And I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I take it from that you don't believe that individuals ought to be responsible for themselves or their children and caring for their health, but it ought to be the province of a governmental structure. And my question is that I'm struggling with trying to understand is what are the incentives for efficiency and cost control and quality if you don't have a marketplace? And am I correct in assuming that you're saying that you do not want to see a marketplace? And why wouldn't a marketplace work? Why wouldn't we want to try to create a market that says let people choose whatever they want, high deductible, low deductible, health savings accounts, if we need to help people of moderate incomes, give them a grant or a voucher and let them take that money? Why wouldn't we want to do that? I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand what the rationale is to create a large government-run program and how we get efficiencies given what other countries have experienced around the world in terms of waiting lists and poor quality and so forth. What help me with that?
Mr. Kopp.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hand, I guess I would start with saying we have the worst outcomes around the world in terms of public health, from infant mortality to low birth weights of those countries that do have those universal systems. So I would not accept the premise that somehow we're moving in a direction that's going to lead us to worse outcomes. Number two, I think the idea that what you're suggesting is exactly what we have today, a hodgepodge of health plans and public programs with subsidies and complicated subsidies at that and applications. We have 1,000 ways to get coverage today, and yet we have 9 million children across this country without any health care coverage, and we have families struggling to afford it. I don't think we have a system, private market or public market. We haven't made up our minds how to proceed, and you know, to offer a family who's struggling a cheap plan with a high deductible just leaves them vulnerable when they need services. If I compare it to public education, we made a choice. You can go and buy private education, but you're guaranteed a public education. And it's very comprehensive and good, and it's affordable. There's no co-pays, there's no deductibles, and there's no eligibility. And that's what we're proposing here for health care for children. It has to do, there's a lot, the most important job I have in my life is a parent, and I accept that responsibility. I cannot provide health care for my children. I'm not a physician, and I suggest that there are certain things that we as a society take on, such as education, and health care for children that lead us as a society to better outcomes.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Koppel, I share some of what Senator Hand is saying. I do believe that when we choose to have children, we are choosing to be their primary caregiver, and we have responsibilities associated with that that should not just be pushed off on the government. Then why have children if they're the government's children and not ours? So I believe there are some responsibilities that parents must accept. That being said, I do understand that health care is a problem and that we do need to see more children with health care coverage than what we have today. I do understand that we have that problem in the system, and I do applaud Senator Solon for working on that issue. I have several questions about the bill, if it's appropriate to ask them at this point in time. Thank you. Senator Solon, I don't see in here at all that there are any deductibles basically for anyone, but that I'm assuming would be part of what the commissioner's plan would be when that were approved at some point in time, should this follow through?
Mr. Chair, there are no deductibles proposed or copays at this time, nor premiums. And this basically is for phase one, but this is to be reviewed by the commissioner to determine what is the best way to proceed, and the commissioner is to come back to the legislature by January to make some recommendations.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would hope that you would consider some of that, because it seems like when people have even the smallest investment in something, they seem to value it more and probably would take better care of their health. You know, I have questions like on numbers of visits. Do you just go to the doctor every week with your children? All those things. But I realize that they come later. One of the concerns that I have also is that I'm not sure I see anything in here that would make, for instance, the clinic the first avenue of care as opposed to what we currently have, the emergency room. If there's anything we're doing to curb some of that poor usage of the medical services that we do have available today, because in effect we do have medical coverage for everyone, but it's not effective either in cost or in care.
Senator Prittner-Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, actually as a provider of health care, I find that the co-payments and deductibles make health care a barrier to most of the clients that I see, particularly in those that are under 300% of poverty, that I find people not coming in for care when they need to have care. I find them ending up in the emergency room with crises because they haven't come in for the preventive care that is necessary and have not had the coordination of care that they need in order to maintain their health and to keep them out of the higher cost services.
Mr. Chair, in Section 5, Subdivision 2, you do talk about the 300% of federal poverty guidelines, and I do understand why you'd want that to be basically substantially high as based on poverty. The question I have is that it appears in the bill that there's kind of a magic cliff. If you're 300%, if you're 299% of federal poverty, you're in. If you're 301% of federal poverty, you're out. So it seems as though there's no personal investment as in a sliding fee or anything at any level. You're either in or you're out based on a dollar. I mean, $1 difference could make that difference. So there seems like there's something missing. Then the second piece of that same question is that effective 2010, it extends to all children regardless of income. So the multi-million dollar salary would have his or her children covered at government expense with no incentive to insure themselves with their wealth. When I look at health care, it's a personal perspective, I'll admit, but it seems like we should do something that is far more on a graduated scale so that it makes sense for everyone instead of a cliff measure.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, if it were up to me, I would provide free health care for all children because I believe that if we give them a good start early in life, that it's going to cut down on costs later in life, that children begin to learn what are healthy practices and get in the habit of making use of prevention, learn about the things that are necessary to maintain their health and avoid some of the things that later in life are a result of not having practiced good health. And so if it were up to me, I believe that it's a right that everybody has. I would provide free health care to everybody. But the purpose of the study is to make recommendations for what is tolerable in Minnesota.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Solon, on page 2 of your bill, it also refers to a permanent resident. In some ways, this bill could make us health care for the nation's children, because permanent resident is pretty tough to I realize you've got criteria in here for permanent resident, but basically, if I'm reading it right, the first day that anyone moves to the state of Minnesota, should they have one child or 10 children, if they rent an apartment and basically make a statement that they intend to stay here, they're immediately covered. How would that prevent an influx of children or a family with illnesses moving to Minnesota on a temporary basis? Because even if they say it's permanent, we know how people move. It's not necessarily permanent, and whose definition of permanent? I see that the way this is written, without some changes, we could become the health care to the nation's children, and I don't think Minnesota taxpayers can afford to do that at all.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, this is an argument we hear about all our public benefits all the time, but it's never happened. There are 9 other states that are at 300% of the federal poverty guideline or above. There are some that are 350 and 400%, and among them are Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Vermont, Maryland, Connecticut, Missouri, Hawaii. There are states such as Illinois that provide universal health care for children. I think California
is debating it now.
California is debating it. There are similar bills in multiple legislatures across the state that are debating this same issue. I don't think it's going to be an issue. It has not been an issue for us in the past when we've been a state that has promoted high health care benefits.
Senator Berglund, Senator, are you done? Senator Berglund and Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, and either Senator Pretner Solon or Mr. Koppel, on page 2, you indicate that the coverage that would be provided through this bill, that if there's private sector coverage available, that this coverage would be secondary. I understand the concept of having secondary coverage to Medicare, but I'm not sure I understand the concept of having this be secondary to private sector coverage. It's on page 2, line 230 and 231.
Senator Berglund, it seems to me that if it would only be secondary, again, if the parent chose to keep child under the, since it's voluntary participation in there, it seems to me that if I say I want to keep my child in a private sector one, then this would be secondary.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I'm asking the question is because I thought the idea was that if they had private sector coverage, they wouldn't be in this at all. But then when I see that the private sector coverage is secondary to the public coverage, then I'm trying to understand that, and that's why I'm asking the question.
I believe, Senator Berglund, that if private sector or Medicare coverage is available, coverage under Children's Health Security Program is secondary, not the primary coverage. So if you remained enrolled in your employer-based coverage, a family decided to stay enrolled in private coverage and enroll in this program, the private coverage would be the primary coverage. But it is not anticipated that a family would do both. It's anticipated that they would make a choice, either stay in their private coverage or enroll in this program.
But if they did have private coverage and they enrolled in this program, then the idea would be that this program would pay for benefits that are not provided through their private coverage?
Secondary. Yes.
Yes, as a secondary payer.
I like a supplement.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, I think we probably need to think about that a little bit more. How that would actually practically be workable. Mr. Chairman, I have the A2 amendment, and I think this would probably be a good time to talk about the amendment.
Why don't you begin explaining the amendment while it's being distributed?
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Senator Solon and members, the first part of the amendment deals with this health, children's health security account that is created. In the amendment, it's a special revenue fund account. And the amendment would indicate that there would be no transfers from the health care access fund into this account. I can't remember how many swords I laid on in 2003 to make sure that we had a separate health care access fund account. And there was a lot of, and I might add, even in this budget that's been presented to us today, diversion of general fund money to use health care access money for that general fund spending in order to make more general fund money available for other things. And I'm concerned that this special revenue account, if it's created, might be able to be used in that manner. And I don't want that to happen. So that's the first part of the amendment. Then the next part of the amendment on lines 1.5 and 1.6 and 1.10 and 1.11 deal with this legislative task force that's created at the end of the bill. And I apologize, Senator Solon, I didn't have time to talk to you about this because this wasn't in the original bill. It just appeared in the amendment today. But this amendment would have this commission report its recommendations to the Legislative Commission on Healthcare Access. That is a statutory commission that exists today, and it hasn't been meeting for a while now because it is a House-Senate commission, bipartisan. But one of the great and exciting things, for me anyway, is that it now will be meeting again. And my hope is, and in talking with some other potential members of that commission, that they will be looking at and making recommendations to the legislature about how to make health care affordable for all people, not just children. And so it would seem to me that if we're going to have a group that's looking at children, that we need to coordinate whatever their recommendations are with whatever the recommendations would be for all people. And so that would be the reason for asking them to report to the Legislative Commission on health care access. And then the last part of the amendment is on lines 1.7 through 1.9, and it deals with this request for a federal waiver. And again, I'm in this amendment deleting numbers 1 and 2. And I'm doing that because, again, it would appear to me in this language that we're assuming somehow that MinnesotaCare and the general funding for this program would be merged together somehow. And I'm not comfortable assuming that. And I think I leave enough language here so that you could still apply for the waiver, and then we could figure out what we're doing in terms of the various pieces of financing after we are granted the waiver.
Senator Berglund, we may want to take these as three separate amendments. I mean, they are three separate issues, and maybe...
Well, they could be divided, yeah, but I thought it might expedite...
Right, it's reasonable to have it on one page, but I think we might want to address, like, the last one separate from the other two, or...
Well, Mr. Chairman, if anyone wants the amendment divided, they could request it, but I thought if there was no objection to the amendment, we might expedite things if we just took it all as one amendment. I think the part about not transferring money out of the health care access fund is related to the language in the waiver request. So they are somewhat related.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Worgen.
Mr. Chair, I have a question on the amendment for Senator Berglund, if I may. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Berglund, I understand why you fell on your sword over not losing the health care access fund to the general fund and some of those things. But I'm really curious as to why this wouldn't be a really good use for the health care access fund, because it's about health care access for children. It's not being diverted away from health care or away from healthcare topic or covering people. So I'm really curious as to why this wouldn't be a very appropriate use for the healthcare access fund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Worgen, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked it. I am not saying that I don't think the healthcare access fund should be used to insure children. It is used to insure children today. My concern is that by diverting money from the healthcare access fund into this separate account that has general fund spending and healthcare access fund spending in it, it would then be possible for someone to propose reducing the general fund spending that might be available to that account in order to spend it in the general fund and increase the responsibility of the healthcare access fund in that account. And that's my concern.
Senator Prittner-Solin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, maybe I can just talk about what my hope was, and maybe this doesn't even relate to it. My hope was that we would be able to have a fund that would be called the Children's Health Security Act Fund, that received funds from wherever we needed to receive those funds. And the goal was to be able to not stigmatize children about being on public programs, but to talk about a program that was health care for children, or, as Mr. Coppola says, go for health care. G-O-F-O-R, go for health care, or go for health care. But some name that would be catchy. I know they have catchy names like that in other states. And they just talk about their children being on the Children's Health Fund or whatever. And that was my hope, that we would have a place where children would not be stigmatized by this, or families would not be stigmatized by it, but would be accessing what I believe is their right.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Solin, I'm sure you can understand my concern about diverting money from the Health Care Access Fund in ways that then make money that is currently being spent on health care for children or for anybody else, be it AIDS patients. I mean, I can list the ways. And I don't think that's your goal. And it certainly is a big concern of mine, because in spite of my objections to it over the years, it continues to be proposed. And I don't want the creation of this. I'm not deleting the fund here. I'm just trying to make sure that we're not going to have this fund be a fund that then creates an opportunity for people to be diverting general fund spending away from health care.
I'm going to suggest that when I look at the first section of the amendment, it seems to be, I don't think it changes anything in the bill, because the commissioner can't transfer funds without authority from the legislature anyway, and I don't think the bill has that. But I'm wondering, because we have several witnesses who have to get back to work and so on, if maybe we could have Mr. Koppel and others take a look at the language, and we can deal with the amendments and other amendments like this a little bit later, so we can get through some of the testimony.
I'd be happy to withdraw the amendment at this time.
We'll keep it on the table, but it'll be set aside for now. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Koppel? Senator Han.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just quickly, I guess a couple of things. One, and Senator Solin, with respect to the comment that you made about your desire would be to find a way to provide everybody with free health care, or every child with free health care. And I have to take issue with that. I don't think there's any such thing as free health care. It's just a question of who's going to pay. And in this bill, what I'm troubled by the scope of this and the fact that we're going to expand it after 2010, and what is the cost going to be? And secondly, how do we know that this is going to be the most efficient way to deliver this service? I'm not aware that government has ever been and had a very good track record of being a cost-effective, low-cost provider of goods and services. We talk about public education all the time. We're constantly in debate in education about how do we get results and how do we find the incentives in the current structure to give people the right message to produce and get good results. And every year we have arguments about money, and there's never enough money, and it doesn't matter how much money we put out there, there's always the same concern, never enough, never enough. So I'm concerned about that, and so I don't want it to be left out there that this is a free structure. What we're saying is we're going to create a structure that is going to be funded by taxpayers, but the amount that's going to be funded is left open, and I'm concerned about do we even have any idea what that is and what the structure is that's going to bring that about in an efficient way. Second thing, Mr. Chairman, just briefly, and Mr. Koppel, going back to something you remark you made earlier about the United States has the worst health care system in the world, and I would like to have some information brought to the committee that would establish that as a fact. I was not aware of that, and I'm not sure that I accept it at this point, but I'd like to see what the data would say that establishes that our health care in this country is the worst in the world. So if you could respond to those things quickly for me, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Hand. We are waiting for a fiscal note, and we don't have that ready yet. It will be ready when we get to finance. The numbers will, of course, depend on the number of children that come into the pool from the private sector. This bill, though, will produce savings to employers, approximating to parents and to both parents and employers. To parents, we are estimating that it will save them approximately $283 million per year in premiums and out-of-pocket costs. Employers will save approximately $182 million per year in premiums. Uncompensated care for children is currently at $70 million and we can save that amount or a good portion of that amount if children have the coverage. There will also be administrative savings that result from the efficiencies of, of pooling children, from streamlining them into these existing public programs. And finally, we have not even begun to quantify the savings that will result from ensuring that all children have access to preventative care. So we are waiting for a fiscal note.
Thank you. Mr. Koppel, did you have?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hunt, yes, I didn't, just to clarify, I didn't say we had the worst healthcare system in the world. I just said of the industrialized nations that we're offering universal coverage in the world, that our health outcomes are worse than theirs. When we look at the World Health Organization and how they measure healthcare outcomes, we are at or near the bottom in many of those categories. So that's the point I was making, that they are able to get good outcomes in their system. And so the second thing is I do have a sheet I can share with you of the costs in terms of we spend about 16% of our gross national product, and I have a list of all these other nations and what they spend of their gross national product, all much less than ours, to get those better outcomes. And lastly, I agree, you know, that the public education system is a constant debate, and, you know, there's never enough money for many things, as you all hear from people like me all the time on other issues, from transportation, everywhere else. And I think that the key thing is that there is in the public interest the outcome of education, that we want the best education outcomes for our children. And that's what this does in a sense, is to bring this pull to your attention to say, what's the best way to get the best outcomes, health care, for our children so that we have the healthiest children that are ready to be the most productive adults? I think that's what we all watch in education, is how everyone goes to it to fix it, because it is in the public interest, and we want this to be in that same interest.
And Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that clarification. And I still would be interested in seeing some of that data that would reflect what you talked about. But to your point of the public interest, and I agree that there is a public interest that we all share to have a healthcare system that covers children and everyone and does it in an efficient and an affordable way, as well as an education system. But my concern is that that because something is a public interest doesn't necessarily mean that government has to be the monopoly provider of that good. And the question that I have and that I struggle with is that to me, the debate about whether a market system is the most effective and efficient way of delivering high-quality goods and services to the most people, it's undisputable that socialism has proven to be spectacular failure. And when we try to enact socialist-style solutions, whether it's for healthcare or education, we struggle with the same kinds of problems that Soviet Union and other socialist countries collapsed under the weight of. You have bureaucracy, you have inefficiency, and Senator Solon, the things you talked about is potential savings, I'd be willing to bet we won't see those savings because we never see the savings that government says we're going to get when we do things through government. Markets are designed to produce efficiency, and government action unilaterally in a monopoly-style way is just impossible to do that. So I agree with the goal, and I think all of us do, that we want to have as a public good the access to health care, good health care, by everyone as broadly as we can and as cost-effectively as we can. What I don't yet see is how this happens when we implement a huge governmental bureaucratic structure that's funded by taxpayers that has no inherent efficient structures or incentives embedded in it.
Mr. Koppel, if you wish to.
Mr. Chairman, that would probably be a long debate. perhaps we can. I'd love to stop by and have a discussion. I guess my short answer would be that Medicare has the lowest administrative cost of any health care program that we run publicly or privately, and that is a government-run program. So I'm not sure government's as totally inefficient as it may seem.
I'd like to call on Shauna Veneman. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you. My name is Shauna Veneman.
Excuse me one second.
Mr. Senator Chairman, did we vote on the...
She withdrew it temporarily so we could have some testimony.
Chairman
first.
Asked if I would just lay it aside for a little while so the author can look at it a little more and we can take some testimony. So I do hope we will return to it before the end of the meeting, though.
Go ahead, Ms.
My name is Shauna Veneman, and I'm here to tell my story. I'm a working single mother of three, and I was previously on medical assistance about a year ago, and they told me that I make too much money, so they cut me off. I then applied for Minnesota Care. That was about 10 months ago, and I never heard anything back from them. My eldest daughter has asthma, and there's a lot of preventative medicine as well as medicine for flare-ups. And that medicine altogether costs about $500. And I would have to get that about every 2.5 months to 3 months. And I don't have $500 to spend that often to get this medicine. And this bill, or I'm not sure what it's called, but this will be a great help for me and my children. We still don't have any assistance. I'm not as much worried about myself, but my children do not have any help to this day. I have my friends that are nurses and my daughter's school nurse that help me to get medicine from the clinics or wherever they can. My grandfather provided some medicine for my daughter. I don't know if this medicine is even correct for her, if it's the correct dosage, but that's what I have to do at this time because we don't have any medical.
Thank you, Ms. Veneman. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Veneman, you said that you contacted Minnesota Care and never heard back from them.
Yeah.
Did you fill out an application?
Yes, I did.
And how long ago did you put your application in?
That was about 10 months ago. And I called them, and they told me at that time that they needed my insurance information from my job, and I told them at that time my employer does not provide any type of insurance, and she said, okay, we'll get something out to you right away, and I never received anything from them at all.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berger.
Ms. Veneman, if you would not mind giving me your contact information after the hearing, I will follow up with the Department of Human Services as to why they have not made your application.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? If not, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Senator Bretner-Sogan, I have a list of people. I don't know if these are your witnesses or not. Should I just go down the Senate?
That's
Denise
fine,
Herman.
Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, and thank you. My name is Denise Herman. I am a school nurse and pediatric nurse practitioner and a member of the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. I've been practicing for 20 years. Healthcare for kids, this is the heart and the meat and the soul of what we do every single day for kids. It's our number one issue. There is not one school nurse, and as we heard, who hasn't heard and hasn't dealt with on a daily basis trying to help family members who are uninsured or underinsured. We are facing it daily, and the words we hear, if you think, we will go to the doctor, but we have no health insurance, we can't afford the copay, we can't afford the deductible, my bill is already too high there, I don't know what to do. Kids come to school with their health problems, and their health problems impact their learning. 12% of kids that come to school have asthma. 3 to 8% of kids that come to school have life-threatening allergies. 1% of kids have diabetes. And all of these conditions are increasing for our kids. 10% of our children have a mental health condition. And 1 to 5% of our kids have had a seizure or a seizure disorder. Every day, me and my colleagues face these stories. I have a parent who emailed one of our nurses on staff, can you help me? I am working 3 jobs to pay for the insulin and the Regent strips for my son's diabetes. I know he's sick. I know he needs to see a specialist, but I can't afford the care. Can you help me with that? I was working with a mother who has 2 children with asthma, who does have private insurance, who needs to be on a controller medication, $25 a pop for each medication, $50 a month. These are just 2 of the 4 children. Every month for the controller medication. She can't afford that. I got a call from a school nurse who works at the ALC. This young woman is trying to get through school, and there is no debate that if she gets through school, she will be a better citizen. She will get a job and do all of the things that we want all of our children to do. She has a mental health condition that requires 4 medications a month and asthma, $125 a month in medication copays. What can she do? Do I have any resources for her? No, I have no resources for her. My resources for her are go back to the doctor. Can he put you on a cheaper med? Can he take you off a couple meds? In the meantime, she's at risk for not also graduating from school. And so it's a cascading kind of effect. Parents lose and change their jobs. Kids with health conditions can't wait 4 months to get coverage. They need presumptive eligibility. Otherwise, they're going to cost us more in the long run. The paperwork is overwhelming, 24 pages. I have a grandmother who is master's prepared, whose daughter is bachelor's prepared, who were in tears having to try and complete the paperwork because the daughter is the preschool teacher and isn't offered health care insurance for her infant. It took them over a month's time to hear whether or not they would be eligible. It's a daunting task to fill out this application. The barriers are huge. And increasingly, what we hear is that parents cannot afford the premiums once they reach that cap for Minnesota Care, They can't afford co-pays in their private insurance. And then the last thing is the reauthorization every 6 months. I had a family come in and ask for immunizations, presented me with their card. They have coverage. When you go into the system, no, they don't have coverage. They've been ineligible for 2 months because the reauth paperwork cannot keep up with the mobility of some of our families as often as it needs to be done. I just implore you, this, and I've listened to the debate, and this is an issue that affects our kids every day, and they need your help. They need coverage today for their health conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Herman. Questions from the committee? Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Herman, more a comment than anything. I also tried to help someone, keyword there, to help someone fill out the Minnesota Care application. It is a virtual nightmare, and if there's one thing we ought to do, I hope Senator Berglund is very successful in getting that reduced to one or two pages.
I'd agree. Four.
Four.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I'll take four.
I never overpromise. Four.
Thank you, Ms. Herman. No further questions. Then the next one, Jerry Gilchrist. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chairman Marty, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Jerry Gilchrist, and I really appreciate the opportunity of being able to address you on an issue about which I feel so passionately. I'm a retired pediatrician. I'm the former chair of the Department of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine at Mayo Clinic. I was in active practice for over 40 years. Most of my activities were devoted to children with cancer and other devastating diseases. But for the past 5 years, I have been a tutor for inner-city first graders in the Minneapolis school system, and I have seen from that side of the fence what kind of an effect the lack of good preventative care has on their learning process. Personally, I've always been particularly proud of our state's commitment to health care needs of Minnesota children. In dealing over the years with colleagues from other states and other areas, I've always been able to present Minnesota as being in front. I don't think we're there anymore. Today, I'm testifying on behalf of the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Without apology, I'll be re-emphasizing some of the points that Senator Solon has made, and I hope you'll bear with me. Children and adolescents are the most vulnerable and politically unrepresented members of our communities. I am here on their behalf to express the strongest possible support for ensuring that all children and adolescents have access to coverage that will in turn provide them with comprehensive health care. Ensuring the health of our state's children is an investment in the well-being of families and children, sets the stage for a strong workforce and a thriving economy well into the future. Children are truly our future. As you've heard, we're dealing with a very fragmented, complicated healthcare system which creates real barriers to health care. The number of uninsured children in Minnesota continues to increase. As you've heard, it's now above 60,000. To me, even more devastating is the point that Senator Solon made, the fact that the number of children without insurance who are in the developmentally critical ages of 0 to 5 has increased by 11,000. Between 2001 and 2004. These are the children who really need the medical educational support systems, and they are not getting it. There are additional barriers. These include co-pays, deductibles. You've heard about the 4 month, which sometimes turns into a 14 month waiting period to access Minnesota's health care programs. All of these barriers have a negative effect on health income outcome. During my days in practice, my years in practice, I saw lots of kids where the diagnosis and treatment was delayed because of economic barriers. Children presenting with cancer, for example, have symptoms that are very similar to children who are presenting with everyday illnesses. But access has been a limiting factor for many, many people. Just last evening, I learned from a colleague about a 7-year-old who she saw in her office who had been having low-grade fevers on and off for the last 4 months. Eventually brought to the doctor because the fevers got higher and higher. And it turns out this child has a kidney infection, has produced lots of kidney damage. A lot of this could have been prevented with earlier intervention and some relatively minor urologic surgery. This child now has the potential to qualify for Medicare because he may well require dialysis and kidney transplant. The father was apologetic, to say the least, and his problem was that he doesn't have the resources. He works, but the employer doesn't provide coverage for his family. I'm sure that these situations are repeated over and over again, day in and day out. Health outcomes for children improve if we remove barriers. The overall cost of health care can also be significantly reduced. It's well known, and it's been commented on here, that the cost and quality of care suffer when the emergency room is the only option for a family's primary care. When children have reliable access to health coverage, they are more likely to get necessary preventative care. This, in turn, helps us to both prevent and manage chronic disease. Access to reliable health coverage also guarantees access to vaccines and other aspects of disease and accident prevention. Healthcare providers for children see accident prevention as being another important aspect of their day-to-day role, and it's something that tends to get overlooked. Healthier children have fewer school absences, and their parents and employers lose fewer work days. The Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics strongly supports expanded access that provides better primary prevention and disease management. A comprehensive benefits package for children, high quality health care, improved access will ensure that all children are able to enjoy optimal health and give them the potential and opportunity for achieving normal growth and development. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time on this important issue. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Gilchrist. Any questions from members of the committee? If not, thank you very much. Call on Kristen Beckman next, and I apologize to people who are having trouble hearing. I didn't know we were going to have a band concert over our heads. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Kristen Beckman. I work for SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. We represent about 28,000 workers across the state, nursing homes, hospitals, public schools, child care providers, and janitors and private security officers in our downtowns. And in other words, we represent a lot of working poor. And one of the reasons we're here today in support of this bill is that health care reform is our top legislative priority. The number one reason for labor disputes across the country in the past 5 years has been the cost of health care. As health care costs increasingly rise, the burden on the employers becomes more and more difficult for them to bear. And so they cost shift onto employees, and some of them cost shift to a point that, like with our janitors, of 4,200 janitors, only 14 of the families can afford family health care insurance. And so when we look at those things and we look at the reasons why, you know, we're on the verge of strike with the janitors and things like that, it is the cost of family coverage. If Minnesota truly covered all kids, and if we had the Children's Health Security Act as offered by Senator Solon, I can tell you now we would have settled this contract 2 weeks ago. We would have signed, because the employers can afford at some level to provide single, and it's always the family coverage where they fall down. And so if our children were taken off of the need between, you know, unions and the employers in the contract negotiations, we wouldn't have the labor disputes that we would have. And more importantly, I think it's been an interesting conversation, sort of the shift of whose responsibility it is to cover our kids, because I truly believe this bill brings an interesting aspect of it removes a burden from the employers. As a parent of small kids, the burden of having health care and having healthy kids will never be gone from a parent, no matter who pays for the health care insurance. But it would, under this bill, be gone from the employer. The employer having the rising cost of family coverage would be removed because they would be in this pool. The other thing that SEIU has been supportive of this bill for the last 3 years is that we have really appreciated the idea of a single pool for Minnesota Care, for MA, and for private insurance kids to be all in one pool without the barriers, with one point of access, with a better application form, those types of things, and just saw it as removing barriers also for families. So we really support this bill, and we would encourage your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beckman. Are there questions from members of the committee? Sir, sure. Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just one quick question. In your testimony, you mentioned that one of the issues that you in negotiation with your employers is the cost of health care and that they can't afford to pay, and it would be better if Minnesota paid. But my question is, who does pay in this? If the employers are not going to pay and the parents are not going to pay, then who will be paying for the cost of health care?
It's Senator Marty, Senator Hand, it's a good question. I think that we all would pay. I mean, that parents would pay. It would be a partnership between employers, parents, through, you know, increased revenues to help pay for.
And Mr. Chairman, but that's kind of my question. Where do those increased revenues come from? I mean, right now we could say we do have a partnership that parents are paying, employers are paying, and we have this partnership. As I get it, what we're saying is, well, we're going to sort of diminish the participation of two of the partners and emphasize the majority stake of one of the partners being the government. But the costs have to be paid by somebody, and so government will have to go to the parents and to the employers and raise the taxes to do that. And are we confident that system is going to be less costly than even what we have today? I mean, I that's where I'm struggling with. I don't get the logic that says doing that and letting the government become the majority partner in this thing is going to lead to greater efficiency and lower cost. I have struggled with that, but maybe.
So, Mr. Chair, and Senator Hand, I will try to answer this, and maybe Senator Solon can jump in. My understanding of how the bill is structured is that right now what parents pay, what employers pay, and what the government pays, that if we moved into this, the only cost increase would be to cover the 70,000-some kids who are uninsured. So there would be that the money that's in the system now through all the different partners would stay in the system now, the same amount. There would be an increase because it would cover 68,000 more kids, and so that there is a cost increase. But there would be a savings in administrative costs and management costs. And so, you know, ideally, you supply health care more efficiently, but that all the money stays in the system. It's just distributed differently and more fairly. And in thinking about, and I get where you're coming from, that you would like to see the free market be able to provide this. And I understand your frustration with sort of the proposal being put that only the government can fix this. And you know, we represent nursing home workers, and we're coming with a bill that says nursing home workers should be able to get into Minnesota care. And we represent child care providers, and they would like into Minnesota care. And we've got K-12 employees, and they would like to pool so that they can buy in the private market. And we have the janitors who are about to strike for health care. We represent all of these different people who come to us and with these desperate stories that we hear. And these are all people operating in the free market right now, and they're not being served. And they are, every one of them is looking for some, every class of employee that we represent needs help with health care. And what, you know, and many of them, their employers have shifted to the high deductible HSAs as, an, you know, trying something, right, to be able to give their employees health care. And so what we've seen with those, which is sort of the new free market answer to health care reform, is that because of the high deductible, people aren't taking this health care. They're not doing the preventative care, and the stories we've heard of sort of you don't do the preventative care, you pay on the back end, that the studies show it's not that you're deterred from over-consuming, it's you're deterred from consuming with these high deductibles. And so I guess I see this as an investment that the free market has not been able to provide yet, and that, you know, all these people saying, oh, God, can we get into Minnesota care? We need a solution. And the high deductible HSA, in our opinion, hasn't been it. And if the free market will continue to try and market reforms, that's fine. But right now, if you took family child care or family health care off of the burden of employers, we'd be in a much better position.
Well, and Mr. Chair, just to comment on that, and my only, I guess, issue I take with your answer is that I don't think we do have a marketplace, and that's part of the problem, that since we've gone to the managed care approach, whenever it was 20, 30 years ago, we've seen costs go up and all these other problems associated go up, and obviously part of it is due to the aging of the population, but we do not have a marketplace, and I would argue that we ought to try that, because in every other form of economic activity that we've engaged in, that has always proven to provide efficient answers to economic questions, which the delivery of a good and service, that's an economic question. When you bring it into government, it becomes political. You have politicians who are elected to divide up the budget, and you have lobbyists, and you have all these things that I would argue do not bring about efficiency but bring about great waste. And so the goal, I think we share, as we said before. I just think that we ought to try to commit ourselves to a market approach and give that a shot, and we don't have it now. That's my comment.
Senator Prittner, so on.
Mr. Chair, this is I know this is would be a long, long discussion and requires a lot of background, but we did start managed care because the health care costs were growing disproportionate, I mean, just exponentially, and there had to be something done to rein in costs. But we need to take our example from other countries where there is single-payer or universal health care, where the percent of their gross domestic product is the amount that they pay on health care is a significantly less amount of the gross domestic product than we pay. And I have heard, and I don't know what the most recent cost differential is, but the last that I heard is that we were almost double the next country, which was Switzerland, in the amount we pay for health care. In addition, we do have tables also that show the better health outcomes in other countries where there is universal health care than we have here in the United States. And we will try to put together for you all of those statistics. But just as a side, think of the great economic development tool we would have for Minnesota if employers did not have to pay for health care for their employees.
Thank you. Senator Erickson-Ropes, and Senator Wergen, and Senator Berglund. We do have four more people who wish to testify, so let's try and be brief.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, this is probably a little bit, the conversations go a little bit off of your bill here, but, you know, there's a lot of foundational ideologies, I think, that it's resting upon. But thank you very much for helping us to understand that uninsured families really are underinsured. Families really act like uninsured families. They don't seek the health care they need. The costs are staring them in the face, the high deductibles, the out-of-pocket expenses. So actually our the senator asked the question, who pays? Well, when people are underinsured or not insured at all, we all pay, because it adds uncompensated costs into the system. Prices escalate all over. So, in fact, thank you very much. I just wanted to point out that. There's tons of other things I could add, but I think we're running, we're pressed on time, so I'll pass on the rest of the Fernava. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be relatively quick. Senator Prettner-Sol, and one of the reasons we're expensive is, again, and we just cannot lose the fact that we are the research and development capital of the world, and we can't move away from that. We have to be careful that whatever we do keeps that intact, or no one anywhere in the world is going to be very healthy, because we do that. Ms. Beckman, my question is basically for you. You have quite a diverse workforce that you represent, and I understand the plight of many of your workers. They are on, in a lot of cases, the lower end of the wage scale, and that's really tough when it comes to health care. Would it be helpful to your members, just overall, and I'm understanding this is a broad statement and not a position of SEIU, would it be helpful to your members if we had, for instance, a pool that they could purchase into on a sliding fee scale basis that was very generous, so that there still was some recognition of income at some point, and there was a way that they could cover their children totally on an affordable basis, purchasing into a state pool as opposed to just toss it out there and give it away?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, I guess it's one of those devils is always in the details. And so I hesitate without knowing sort of copays and premiums and the barriers and the and those type of things to sort of blanket. I think that working poor and middle class are trying to figure out a way to consume health care that is affordable and accessible, and you know, and we would be happy to look at any proposal that would get them into the system and have them insured at a level. I appreciate that, too.
Thank you. Senator Berger.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Wergen, just for your information, that is what would happen under Senate File 2 that we'll be hearing a week from today.
Okay.
What I just wanted to do, Ms. Beckman, is to correct one thing you said, because we have a lot of new people in this committee, and I don't want them to misunderstand. This bill does not bring any employer premiums or any employer contribution into the program to cover health care for children. It would be state expenditures from one mechanism or another. And that is one little concern. I am a co-author on the bill, and I generally support it, but I do have one little concern about, you know, the tax dollar making up for what could be a fairly large amount of private employer premiums that are going into paying for health care for children today.
Senator Meyer, I appreciate that correction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next one, we have four more people. One is from out of town, so I'll call her first. Lila Scramstead. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Lila Scramstead, and I'm a board member of the Greater Minnesota Healthcare Coalition. Our organization has several thousand members, and we have over 30 years' experience in state healthcare policy. We have testified before this committee in each of the past few years, once by special request. We are here to speak in support of Senate File 15, with the inclusion of Senator Prettner-Solin's new amendment. We totally support the effort to expand more state health care coverage to uninsured Minnesotans. We ultimately want to see the state ensure universal coverage for everyone, yet we realize that is a reasonable start to start off first with kids. It is also an affordable way to start because kids on average don't have as much in medical expenses as the overall adult population. I'm a senior, and so I'm well aware that a person's annual medical expenses and premiums go up the longer we live. This is exactly why the state needs to look at the issue of providing coverage as economically as possible. If you don't, then universal coverage for adults just won't happen. It won't happen in Massachusetts, for example, despite their new effort, because it doesn't include serious cost containment. Serious cost containment has to include tackling the huge administrative waste in the current system. There's only one major overriding culprit for this. It is the insurance industry, including Minnesota's not-for-profit private HMOs. They claim to have low administrative cost, but this is Enron-type bookkeeping. All you have to do is look at the only independent external audits ever done on this by the Minnesota Attorney General. You should ask the AJ to explain what her office has found and listen closely. We know that it'd be a mistake for Senate File 15 to put the coverage in the hands of the private HMOs. They already waste at least 10% of what you pay them for the state's low-income programs. That's about $170 million wasted each year. It would also be a mistake to simply create an option for fee-for-service delivery and leave it up to the Department of Human Services to decide whether or not to use. It is well known that the current DHS is very hostile to fee-for-service and wants to help the HMOs take over the rest of the state programs and reap even larger revenues than they do now. Just ask the counties who apply to do county-basing purchasing and who get opposed tooth and nail by the DHS. If the legislature is not willing to put the coverage of all kids outside the reach of the private HMOs, then at the very least, we urge you to do two things in Senate File 15. Require DHS to contract a fee-for-service basis with all willing health care providers, and also require DHS to contract with any county-based purchasing system that it wishes to do so. We also believe that the fee-for-service rate should be increased for health care providers because they're too low. The proof of this is that both HMOs and the county-based purchasers usually pay providers more than the fee-for-service rates that DHS sets. And finally, it is also important that you take measures to not let DHS rig the system to give private HMOs unfair advantage over public sector service delivery. Please remember that when the legislature first privatized medical assistance and Minnesota care, you said it was a demonstration product to see if the HMOs could be more efficient. But the legislature never evaluated if the HMOs really save the state money or not. You can't rely on the figures they give you, and that's why you need to look at the Attorney General's audits. We applaud the provisions of the Prettner-Solins new amendment to receive DHS to present the service delivery special proposal to the legislature next January and to create a legislative task force to recommend cost containment ideas next January. We look forward to being part of the debate. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Scramstedt. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Hand.
Just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick one, Ms. Scramstedt. Thank you for coming and testifying. I'm not familiar with the Greater Minnesota Healthcare Coalition. Maybe just tell me briefly what that is. But beyond that, I guess the other question related to that is, I take it from your testimony that you don't believe that free markets work and that government is the most efficient way to provide goods and services. Would that be fair to take that from your testimony?
You could probably take that, Mr. Chair and Senator Hans, because free market always leaves somebody out. Not everybody can buy a car. That's free market. Not everybody can buy a house. That's free market. And there are people in our society that can't buy clothes, and that's free market. Do we really want to leave health care in the free market?
I would.
If it's fine if we decide that certain people don't deserve health care. It's as simple as that. Not everybody can afford things that are offered in the free market. Greater Minnesota Healthcare Coalition is a group of a couple of thousand, 3,000-4,000 people in Greater Minnesota that have been working on health care forever.
Thank you, Ms. Scramstedt. Brian Rushy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian Rushy with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, and this is Laurie Beckman-Yetzer from our Congregations Concerned for Children Network. JRLC is comprised of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and the Islamic Center of Minnesota. We're very happy to be here. We'll quickly testify because I know you have not much time left. We're very happy to be here to support Senate File 15, the Children's Health Security Act. And our leadership and lay people around the state are very excited about working towards this initiative. We can find consensus around this issue because of our belief in the dignity of every human person and that every person should have access to health care. We also find consensus around this issue because of the stewardship of health care dollars, and this is something that we've been talking about. We're really disturbed about the fact that we spend a greater portion of our GDP on health care and have some of the lousiest outcomes for that money compared to other nations. Clearly, the way that we have structured or non-structured our healthcare system, we're not getting very much money or very much value for our money. So it's human dignity and stewardship of our healthcare dollars. Most of the people that we talk to in our typically Sunday morning forums or Wednesday evening committees or wherever we're talking to people around the state are pulling their hair out about healthcare, whether increasing premiums for small businesses, for larger employers, for people, for families. People are tearing their hair out, and they're ready for some bold action. And I think what's missing in the frustration that I hear is sort of, you know, where's the handholds? Where can we get a grip on this problem that we face and get a good, solid beginning? And I think that there is an emerging consensus that we should start with children. We should move out on a bold plan to make sure that we insure all kids. And that really resonates with the public. And I think in some senses the public is ahead of those of us that hang around here a lot. They're ready for something. They're ready for something new. Let me conclude, and then Lori will just have a quick comment. There's a story in the book of Genesis about Jacob. He's about to embark on a long journey. And he says, I will lead on according to the pace of the children. And children grow up fast. And so I'm going to be quick and finish my remarks, but urge you to act fast too.
Beckman-Yetzer. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. As Brian said, I'm Lori Beckman-Yetzer. I am organizer for Congregations Concerned for Children, which is part of the JRLC network. We have about key advocates in 415 congregations across the state and an email network of about 1,500 individuals. And as Brian said, as we've been out around in congregations, there's just a lot of energy around this proposal to cover all kids that people see how it impacts them and their own children. I had a story shared at one event. A third grade teacher talked about a student whose parent had lost their employment and lost their health coverage and needed to go through the 4-month waiting period. And this student was severely ADHD, had medication, and the parent could not afford the medication for those 4 months. And the teacher talked about how this was essentially 4 months almost completely lost of that student's education and the disruption caused for other students in that classroom that was significant. And the other parents in the room thought, yeah, this is impacting my kids too and how they're learning. And just the conversation that bubbles up in those rooms as people are sharing the stories of how healthcare issues are impacting them. And as a people of faith, that they're saying together, we need to come together to do something about this. We need to get these kids covered so they all are doing better off in the long run. So I'll leave it at that because I know there's more to come. But
thanks, Mr.
Thank you.
Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Senator Berger.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Rushi, I'm sure you don't mean for your comments to be interpreted that your congregations think that when a person reaches 19 or 20 that they are less entitled to dignity or, for that matter, affordable health care?
No, we would argue that every person deserves health care. It's just, again, I get back to that point about where can we get a grip and get a good start that enjoys broad political support. We also support the bill to expand access to Minnesota care. You know, it seems to me that as a nation we decided some time ago that we were going to be really kind to our elders. We were going to wipe out poverty with the Social Security system and put into place health care with Medicare. That's worked pretty well. It's just not right that we don't build the next age cohort, and I would argue that there's political will now to do it for kids, and we should keep building.
Senator I had several more questions. Quickly, Senator Worgen, did you have one? No.
No, I didn't.
Okay, I'm sorry. Senator Hand, then Senator Torres.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just very quickly, and mostly, I guess, Senator Marty, to ask and get in the testimony the statement that our health care system in this country produces lousy outcomes and we spend a higher cost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's per capita or just total dollars. And
GDP.
Some people might say that that's a good sign that we spend as much as we do on health care. But there's an assumption here that seems to be behind this bill and maybe some other bills is that our current way of doing health care compares very poorly to the rest of the world. And I think that until we have some evidence presented to the committee that would establish that, I don't know that we ought to assume that. And if that is, in fact, the basis for acting on these bills, I think it would be helpful to have some testimony and some data that would be demonstrating or making the case that we have, in fact, a very bad healthcare system in this country rather than just assume it to be true. And as a new member of the committee, that may be my ignorance here, but I would ask that we spend
will.
Some time doing that. Thank you.
We will get some information. Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray.
I just have a statement for our two witnesses that I really appreciate you're here, and I think it is important that I say to you that we don't have consensus and you don't hear consensus at this table. This is an issue of human dignity, and this is human rights, but we don't have consensus. We are the wealthiest nation in this planet, and we are arguing here about how are we going to pay for health care for 70,000 children. These 70,000 children include my own children and your children. I haven't had the problem that I had 6 months ago. I've been working for 19 years in this country since I came here. From the first year that I got here, I've been working, and I decided to run for office a few months ago, and I had to resign from my job. And for the first time in my life, I was without a job, and I have two children who are 12 and 10 years old, and one of them has asthma. And I really had a problem. You know, I was covered with Cobra, and I had to pay $520. And I had a copay of $5,000. And I struggled for 6 months with that issue. My two children are part of these 70,000. They are no longer in a statistic because now I have coverage. So it is an issue of human dignity and human rights, but we are not in consensus. And I hope that you can tell the communities and the organizations that you work with that there might be consensus amongst the people that work with you and your organizations, but not in Minnesota and not in this nation for sure. So I just wanted to say that.
Two more witnesses. Quick, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I just wondered when the meeting's going to end. I want to make sure we get back to the amendment.
I hope we do. We have two more witnesses. Catherine Commit, maybe if you want to come up, and then Dr. Garland. And then we'll get back to the amendment right away. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I brought a few handouts with me. Let's see. Mr. Chairman, Senator Solon, and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Catherine Commit. I'll try and go through this quickly. I also want to get to some handouts that I brought to supplement the testimony. I am the Director of Policy for the Minnesota Government, for the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on Senate File 15. I just want to provide you with a little bit of background about who we are. The Council is a trade association that represents the 8 nonprofit health plans in Minnesota. The Council promotes the delivery of high-quality, affordable health care. Our health plan members are active in areas of health care reform, research-based guidelines development, community health prevention, medical technology assessment, and healthcare quality data collections. Our members employ nearly 16,000 Minnesotans and are located in communities across the state. As nonprofit organizations, our members are recognized throughout the country for their collaborative efforts to improve the healthcare of their members. Most recently, the health plans, in collaboration with the Minnesota Medical Association, launched Minnesota Community Measurement. And I'd be happy to talk more about that at a later date. Minnesota's health plans are dedicated to strengthening Minnesota's rank as the healthiest state in the nation. Together with community partners, our health plans both lead and support efforts to increase the value of healthcare services. I want to be very clear about this. The Minnesota Council of Health Plans supports universal coverage. We believe that all Minnesotans should have healthcare coverage. We are pleased with the attention that lawmakers are directing toward increasing the number of children covered in Minnesota. I just want to make a few specific comments about Senate File 15. On Section 5 regarding eligibility, there's been quite a bit of discussion, but I want to be sure and say that we support the goal of this legislation and support the language to provide coverage for kids up to 300% of the federal poverty guidelines. We are concerned, however, about the effect that carving children out of the existing risk pool will have on premiums in the commercial market. As a group, children tend to be healthier, a lower cost population, and therefore their inclusion in the commercial risk pool helps to spread the costs over a larger number of people. And I do want to just address a couple of things that have been said earlier about this would only affect 72,000 people or thereabouts. And I did want to share with you, and I'll pass this out, give it to the page, some U.S. Census Bureau data that shows in Minnesota for data collected in 2005 to 2006, the number of children of the total population in Minnesota, right now we're about a 5 million, we have about 5 million people in this state. 1.3 million of those citizens are children, and based on an income to poverty ratio, those falling below 300% number about 525,000 children. Those at 300% and above are about 780,000. So I want to be really clear and hope that the committee members understand when we're talking about putting every child under 300% in this plan, you're really talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of 525,000 children. I also just want to share I'll get back to that. We do believe it's possible to extend coverage to all children without creating unintended consequences to the rest of the market. Section 12 deals with monitoring and evaluation of quality and costs, and I want the committee to know that the council supports monitoring and evaluating quality and costs. In fact, the Minnesota health plans are required to submit more than 200 reports annually to DHS, to the Department of Health, to Commerce, and other state agencies. And these reports contain detailed information on spending, quality, utilization, customer service, and more. I just have a single copy of a list of all the reports that one health plan has to file. It numbers, let's see, it's about 7 pages on pretty small font, and total number of reports for 1 year are 249 reports. So I can assure you there's no shortage of reporting requirements that the health plans are required to submit to a variety of state agencies as well as the federal government. However, so I'm pleased that the bill recognizes the importance of getting that information, and we would just encourage the author and the others supporting this legislation that rather than creating additional reporting requirements, we would suggest a review of existing reporting requirements and then build off of them to enhance the information about quality improvement. Section 15 is in the amendment addresses the Legislative Task Force on Children's Health Care Coverage, and I emphatically want to say that the council supports the creation of the Legislative Task Force on Children's Health Care Coverage, and we believe this would be a good venue to continue working on these issues. Let me just make a few general comments, and then I'll finish. We would like to see language included in the bill on outreach. According to the Department of Health, nearly 80% of Minnesota's uninsured children are already eligible for current state programs. And I would pass out a document just so that people are aware. This is so if the page could come by. I got this information from the Minnesota Department of Health that puts out just terrific information. This is from February 2006. It's about 132-page report on health insurance coverage in Minnesota trends from 2001 to 2004. And what I've copied for you is page 68 of that report. And on that graphic, you'll see that there are 78% percent of potentially publicly eligible kids are not covered. If we do a better job of outreach, if we do a better job of reducing the application form and all the other things that people have talked about, we could go a long way to closing that gap and succeeding in practically having universal coverage for children. So I wanted to be sure that the committee knew that this report and many other reports from the Health Economics Program at the Department of Health exist and are extremely informative and valuable for understanding our healthcare market in Minnesota. I would also, and I just wanted to show this because I had showed it to some other folks. This has been referenced earlier, but this is the Minnesota Care application form. And it is a total of 24 pages. It's got about 8 pages or maybe 12 pages of instruction. I think Senator Berglund has talked about it being something that we'd like to get the number of pages down to 4 or in that neighborhood. I just wanted to share with you, because there's been discussion about the private market and that sort of thing, I pulled off this today a couple of application forms from individual health plans for coverage, and I'll just say this one is 3.5 pages, this is 4 pages, this one's 5 pages, and this one is 6 pages. So I think that there may be a way to do it in a more condensed form, and you know, I would hope that by using the private market and working with the government and working with the legislature, we could find ways to have a more efficient system. I guess in summary, I would just say that the Minnesota Council of Health Plans strongly supports the goal of this legislation to expand coverage to all children. We believe that when people have coverage, they're more likely to seek earlier intervention and treatment, resulting in better health care. And I can't go away without commenting on some of the earlier testimony about the use of or the amount of administrative costs at health plans. And I do want to pass out one more document. I anticipated that this might come up. This is another report from the Health Economics Program. And this talks about health insurance premiums and cost drivers in Minnesota in 2005. Again, these are health economists at the Department of Health. And they have calculated in a pie chart on page 4, this is where your healthcare dollar is spent. And you'll see that for physicians, it's about 33% inpatient hospital, a little over 18% outpatient hospital, 13.7% drugs are 15.2%, other medical 10.4%, admin costs are 9.1%. We are required by law to report admin costs. It's specified in statute how we can report them. We are audited by the Departments of Health and the Department of Commerce. So I just want the committee to know, because there are so many new members, that we are heavily regulated and we must follow state statute and regulations in reporting our expenses as well as the amount of health care dollars devoted to direct health care. I guess with that, I will end my comments and answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kmit. I do think, Senator Sogan, under your bill, you might have a 1-page application form when phase 2 is implemented. What are your ages and names of your kids and where they live? And I think you could do it in 1 page instead of their 3 or 4, because you wouldn't have the pre-existing conditions and everything else that's often.
That's
Senator
right.
Lori.
Thank you, Chairman, and also Ms. Kmit. I'd have one comment that's been percolating in my head as we discuss this today and over the last weeks, and as we move forward. One of the things that we seem to have a great deal of trouble with is getting a consistent set of information that we can move forward with. Lila shed a lot of light on that in her testimony. You talk about these 249 reports. I'm curious to what why do we have this debate around how reliable those are? To what extent are those audited by independent state agencies? We hear about some of the audits that the AG has come in and done. I'd really like to. I think that there is broad agreement that our healthcare system is in great need of major reforms, and one of the huge barriers that we keep running into is a sound foundation to work from on where are our costs going today? And it's very frustrating to me personally, and I think to many of the other members here. And so one of the things I'd really like to get a handle on is how we can get sound audited numbers that we can all begin to work from. So if you could take a minute and address that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Senator Marty and Senator Lori, thank you for your question. I agree with you that it's frustrating for me, too, to sit in the audience and hear things that I don't believe paint an accurate picture of what the healthcare market is in Minnesota or the state of healthcare in Minnesota. And there are a lot of new committee members here, and I think it is really important to get as much information as possible. And I would encourage the chair and the members of the committee to take some time at this early stage of the legislative session to hear from some experts, from the people who work on this as their full-time job, from the departments of health, the departments of commerce, for whom it is their number one priority to oversee and regulate the kind of activity that the health plans are engaged in. And I think that it would be ever so helpful for those of you who are new to hear what's the baseline of our regulatory system here in Minnesota, because you are going to get inundated with lots of different opinions and ideas about what's wrong with the healthcare system and what needs to be fixed. I can assure you that I have it's my credibility is extremely important. If I don't tell the truth before you, then I will have no credibility and I will have no job. So it's extremely important to me to make sure that you have accurate information so that you can make a sound decision. But I think it is important to get a basis of understanding because as policymakers and as lawmakers, you have some huge issues to consider. And so I just would encourage you to seek the support of the state agencies that oversee us.
One quick follow-up. I mean, I was in some meetings with the Department of Health, and there were some very troubling statements that they had regarding these very reports that you handed out. I mean, when asked about how it was that we went about verifying these, they said, well, we hope that the health plans are consistent with how they report this, and we hope that they follow all of the reporting requirements that we put out there, but there was an alarming lack of certainty that was the case. And I think that when when that becomes the situation, it opens up the dialogue to people really having a great deal of doubt about the numbers that are put forth, and it just really makes it that much more difficult. So my specific question was, to what extent are these reports audited by an independent state agency?
Mr. Chair and Senator Lori, I am aware of that conversation that you reference because a staff from the agency came up and talked to me about that. And the fact is that the Department of Health regulates and audits our health plans. They actually come in, they bring in a team of people, they sometimes office in the health plan for several months, going through their records, pulling charts, looking at everything, making sure that they're following through and following the law on all the things that we have to do. So I think that you got an incomplete answer in the meeting that you had. I can assure you that we are heavily audited and regulated and have to produce quite a bit of information back to the state agencies. I'd be happy to talk with you further offline about that and would be happy to share more information.
I appreciate that.
I'm going to ask members of the committee, we have one more witness. We have at least one amendment that may have been, I don't know how controversial it's going to be. I would love to get the bill done. We're going to be kicked out of here in 10 minutes. We would next take up this bill next Wednesday if we do not finish it today. You wish to have the other witness, you wish to keep going with questions, or would you like to try and act on the bill? Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I just wanted to ask a brief question that was provoked by the testimony here to Senator Bretner Solon with respect to the data on the numbers of children in the state and in your bill on Section 5 eligibility particularly Part B, Paragraph B, where we expand this to include all children regardless of household income, I would suggest that there would be over 1.3 million children that would be covered by this program. And are those costs, and if it's also true that, that would have somewhat of a negative effect on the costs of other insured given the removal of children from the general pool, are you still confident that this is financially doable and going to be a cost savings given that many of these children are currently being covered through other insurance methods?
Yeah. Mr. Senator, Chair, sorry. Senator Han, I'm sorry. I don't know why I have a hard time with that. First of all, the program is entirely voluntary, so there is no assurance that all those children would come into the program. But it would cover the 68,000 who are currently uninsured, all the children that are in our public programs, and there would be some that would come in from the private market. Your question is that going to affect rates? And what we know is that adult premiums might go up in any given scenario, but employers will still be covering fewer people, so the overall cost will not increase. In fact, employers will save approximately $182 million per year in premium payments. And so if adult premiums go up, that means in the current healthcare system that children are subsidizing adults. This is an unfair burden on children, and this pool would remedy that problem and place the focus on good health care coverage for children.
And Mr. Chairman, just and Senator, Senator Solon, just if there's currently a large proportion of children being covered through private and other insurance programs that their parents are paying for and employers are paying for, and there's premiums and deductibles, and we offer them something for which there are no premiums and no deductibles and no cost, why wouldn't 100% of the people choose that if that was a choice? If you can either stay with what you're doing right now and pay the premiums and pay the deductibles, or you can go over here and get it all at no cost to you directly but only indirectly through government, why wouldn't people just say, why would I stay in a private market? Why would I do that? Wouldn't everybody go to that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Han, I would hope they would. I actually would hope they would. I don't know that that will happen, and we often find that there are people that just prefer to stay with their private insurance.
Senator Berglund had an amendment that she asked if we, well, she laid it on the table for a few minutes. Did you want to reoffer it? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer the A2 amendment. I'd like to make an oral change to the amendment based on the author's
request.
Does
everybody have the A2 amendment? We'll make sure you do if you don't. Go ahead with the oral amendment.
It would be to substitute instead of line 1.7 of the amendment, to not have that line in the amendment and to insert instead page 6, line 8, delete merge and insert coordinate and delete into the and insert a semicolon and page 6, delete line 9.
So page 6, the amendment, the A2 amendment, line 1.7 yes. would yes. read, Senate Councilwoman.
Mr. Chair, it would be you delete line 7 and insert page 6, line 8, delete merge and insert coordinate, and delete into the insert a semicolon.
Page 6, line 8.
Line
9.
Do you want to do the 8?
Well, it'd be on the amendment. It'd be
line 8 of the amendment. You want to take out,
she was going to
delete 2 and insert 1 and.
It's just a technical coordination.
Yeah, so it and then delete line 9.
And Senator Berglund, you are offering it that way. You're incorporating that into
yes.
it.
Yes. So the effect would be on page 6 of the bill, on line 6.8, it would read coordinate medical assistance and Minnesota care coverage for children.
Is there a discussion of the A2 amendment as offered?
Mr.
Senator Kretner-Solon.
I can accept this amendment as amended.
Senator Solon says it's okay with her. There is further discussion? Not all those in favor of the A2 amendment as offered, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment as well somewhere here. I apologize. It could be passed out. The council has it also.
while it's being handed out, maybe you can describe the amendment.
I can, Mr. Chair. And Senator Solon, I had this drafted earlier in the committee, and having heard your testimony since then, I have this really strong hunch you're not going to like this one. But anyway, Mr. Chair, what this does is takes out on page one, line 27, it deletes the 300 and inserts instead 400% of the federal poverty guidelines, and after the word eligible, it inserts on a sliding fee basis. In other words, the eligibility guideline, as according to federal poverty guidelines, goes up, but there is a sliding fee basis inserted so that there is some investment based on ability to pay into the program. And then it just deletes lines 29 and 30, which say that after July of 2010, all children, regardless of income, are in the program. In other words, the sliding fee on the 400% of poverty guideline instead replaces it so that it becomes an affordable program for all children in Minnesota.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. Chair, you know, I would prefer not to accept this at this time, but I'd certainly agree to have continuing conversations with Senator Wergen about it.
Further discussion. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wergen, I'm trying to understand this amendment a little bit. Would this amendment then imply that there would be some subsidy for families up to 400% of poverty? There'd be some contribution from them, but there also would be some subsidy.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct, Senator Berglund.
Further discussion on the amendment? If not, on the Wergen A3 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Is there further discussion on the bill? If not, Senator Pretner Solon moves that Senate File 15 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to
State and Local Government Operations.
State and Local Government Operations Committee. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. I apologize. We had one witness we did not get to. We will give him a chance to speak another time, or I will ask Senator Resk to allow him to at the next committee. But I apologize to that witness, and thank you, and the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You got any
Sarah? Probably just the machines.